This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. This is the last week of summer here, basically. We're right before Labor Day long weekend. And we've got a fantastic guest. We've got Derek Fenton. He is the Vice President of Marketing and Sales at Zenterra Developments. If you haven't heard of Zenterra, you will hear about them because they are probably one of the fastest growing development companies in the Lower Mainland.
It's kind of an incredible story. I feel like most people that watch the Fraser Valley in any capacity will know of Zenterra. They're very active in Surrey, very active in Langley. But man, what they have in the pipeline is incredible. They're growing by leaps and bounds. They've been very active over the last couple of years. So this is a great conversation about what's going on in the Fraser Valley, why they love it so much, and why they're excited about the future.
And Derek is, he's a really interesting guy. He's a millennial who has been with the company when there were only four people. And now there's 115 staff, I should say, at Zenterra.
How often do you think, I'm not saying this about that Derek would do this, but if I was Derek, how often do you think you'd bring that up?
Like that you're a millennial?
No, that you're the fourth one through the door.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I thought you were talking generationally.
Every room I walked in at work, that would be the first thing I'd lead with. Back when there was only four of us.
Exactly. No, but I love this conversation. Derek's a super bright guy. We cover not only the Fraser Valley, but we talk about markets in general. He's got a bunch of great insight into what's going on with not only affordability.
He was their VP of development and acquisition before this position for most of his near 15 years there. So in terms of knowing the market and knowing the sites and what's popping.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
Well, and this is it. And I mean, if you're thinking about the Fraser Valley at all, we get his top picks for pockets that he's excited about, best buys. And anyways, it's a great conversation. I'll save it for the listener. And Matt, what else do we have for the day? Well, of course, we've got the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. And this week, Matt, what's the headline?
The headline this week, Adam, is BC Building Code, increasing accessibility, but decreasing affordability. And what MLA means here is the new BC Building Code for adaptability comes into effect March 10, 2025. So next spring, this new code now requires 100% adaptable units in large condominium and apartment buildings. So what do these differences look like? There'll be things like reinforcing bathroom walls for future grab bars, widening paths of travel, i.e. hallways and bedrooms, bathrooms, kitchens, new placement for switches, and controls. And of course, I mean, nobody's going to argue with accessibility. That's a great thing.
Yeah. But I mean, of course, with affordability, Matt. So, you know, as MLA had in their 2024 Intel report, a unit that was originally 500 square feet now may have to increase in size up to 575 square feet to ensure that these accessibility requirements are met. So just make the assumption that a price per square foot is something that is maybe $1,150 a foot, for example, right? This would increase the price from $575,000 to $661,000, which as you mentioned is almost $100,000.
So. That's almost $100,000.
Yeah, it's almost $100,000. Your math skills are top notch. To help maintain affordability, you know, we are going to see other areas of the home likely suffer. An example, you have to compromise space from potentially the living area or the dining area to accommodate these changes. And, you know, I think there's a couple things that are going to result from this. One, MLACs, a lot of developers are likely going to try and get their development applications into the city prior to this change, right? So they don't actually have to abide by these changes. And of course,
it's pretty onerous.
And of course, if these are implemented, you would imagine that so the floor plans are going to look quite a bit different in new construction, and affordability will be further impacted.
Lots to consider there, Adam.
And Matt, if you like that headline and you want to learn more, subscribe to the MLA Newswire. This is a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. So visit MLACanada.com and subscribe today. Matt, of course, we are also sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate team in Vancouver. And we've got another hot new listing coming.
We do. We have a hot new listing coming right after Labor Day. And there's a number of hot new listings coming after Labor Day. But I wanted to highlight this one. This is a fantastic new listing in Richmond, in Brighouse, right by Brighouse Station. Some of you may know the Saffron building. This is a Ledmac building from 2012, unit 201-6828 Eckersley Road. The location is phenomenal. But what I really like about this unit is 692 square feet, and it's a one bed.
That's a good size.
So they don't build them like this anymore. All the one beds in this complex are large. The living room, the dining area, nice size balcony. There's no wasted space and nothing not to like in this home at 201-6828 Eckersley Road, offered up at $588,000. That's a sharp price. And this is one not to miss. And if you want to take a look, head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where we have all of our featured listings. And of course, Adam, while you're there, click on Sell With Us and you will be able to download the sold plan. Adam, what does the sold plan stand for?
It's our most downloaded document to date. It stands for Start On Launch Date. So this is a step-by-step guide to get your property ready for market. And it's really designed to get you top dollar in the shortest amount of time. If you're thinking about selling this year or even in a few years, this is a document you want to keep on file. Of course, if you are in the industry and you want to review the document and potentially learn from it, it is available to everybody for free. It's an instant download over at our site, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. But Matt, without further ado, let's cut to our conversation with Derek Fenton, Vice President of Marketing and Sales at Zentera Developments.
Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Derek Fenton. He is the Vice President of Marketing and Sales at Zentera Developments. How you doing, Derek?
Doing very well, Matt. Adam, how about you two?
Yeah, doing great. Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time today, Derek. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, 100%.
Derek, can you maybe start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, 100%, Adam. So yeah, before I begin, I just wanted to kind of both thank you for putting on such a high-value podcast. Before we kind of get into this, I just wanted to, the great insights, the great guests, the well-produced show, there's a tremendous amount of value. And just with a lot of people that I talk about within the industry, there's been a lot of pauses. So I just wanted, before we kind of begin, just kind of throw that back out to you guys, great job on that.
Thank you very much.
That's nice to hear.
There you go.
So you're familiar with the show. That's good to hear. Okay.
Yeah, long time listener, first time on type thing, right? So, Adam just mentioned, Vice President of Marketing and Sales at Centerra Developments. I'm a born and raised Vancouverite. Grew up in the North Shore. Was very fortunate to grow up in North Vancouver. So, basically just had nature in my backyard. And, I have, from schooling wise, I have an undergrad in sociology and history from Capilano U. Graduated from a BCIT in their real estate program under the old program head, Bill Phillips, who is a tremendous educator. And then also, I went to a UBC and had their urban land economics with a specialization. I'm also an active member with some of the government relations committees, both I'm the vice chair with Haven, the Home Builders Association of Vancouver, and also the vice chair with the CHBA, which is the Canadian Home Builders Association as well.
Nice. And fantastic. How'd you get into real estate?
I think from a lot of your guests, somewhat accidentally. When I first kind of graduated high school, it was just kind of like I didn't really know what to do. So I just kind of decided to take a few courses at Capilano. And I did that for a couple of years and I said, to kind of heck with this, I'm going to go be a ski bum for a year. Kind of came back from there, skied like 160 days. And then basically came back. I was like, I'm going to go get into real estate because my dad did some real estate lending from the bank side. So kind of finished up my courses there, went over to BCIT and then ripped over into that.
Right on. And you know what, Derek, I think most of our listeners will know Centerra. And usually I just say, tell us about Centerra. But actually, before we went live, you mentioned, close to 15 years ago, being one of four people working at Centerra. And now there's over 100. Maybe can you talk about the origin story from boots on the ground, from being boots on the ground at that early stage?
100%, Matt. So like as you just mentioned, I basically kind of started my career with Centerra Development. And, very early on when I first graduated, I saw a tremendous amount of opportunity in the Fraser Valley. And that's primarily where Centerra Development's up, build, and develop. So we're full service developers. So we do our construction, acquisitions, development, sales, marketing, home care, all under one roof. And one of the biggest positive pieces about that is the fact that we're able to control every avenue of the development. From design, proper communities, proper amenity spaces, working with the municipalities, having good rapport with them, but then also continuing on to be able to deliver, award-winning homes. That's been very important to us. Matt, going back to your kind of original piece about, where it kind of started was that, there's a handful of group of us, very startup mentality. And I'm going to run through kind of like our third growth cycle of Centerra. When we first started, it was just, scrappy group, very entrepreneurial. Everyone basically said, hey, you kind of do whatever it takes type of thing, right? We were kind of a Swiss Army knife, no matter what you kind of did, you had to be able to do everything. We started off with a couple projects, a couple townhome sites, 60, 70 units, and basically kind of grow from there. And basically when we were very well positioned and when we saw the last kind of, or the one of the first big market of booms back in 2016, over the last kind of 15 years, and we were well positioned, we did reasonably well then. And we basically kind of went, bought another number of well positioned communities and expanded through there. So we basically, in the early days, small group, that like I mentioned, that startup mentality, we kind of grew, we had this growth stage. Now we're in time, this next section of kind of more of an established expansion type role where we have, larger teams, multiple selling communities. We have four active selling communities. We have between about 3,500 and 4,000 homes in active application development. And we currently have about 1,000 homes under construction today.
Do you miss the early days?
Yes and no. There's parts of it, being scrappy, just kind of doing whatever it takes. It was fun. I think it's very much like that kind of that entrepreneurial spirit, which is a lot of fun. You're learning everything for the first time, figuring everything out. And, it's a lot of fun. But, I think one of the big things that I've liked and really enjoyed of what's kind of coming up with our larger teams, more staff, is really just in my role, is just the benefits of being able to do the a lot of the mentorship and teaching a lot of things that I've learned over, you know, the past like almost 15 years, and kind of downloading that to the next kind of generation of real estate people, and being able to kind of continue that for the years to come.
Derek, you mentioned that you've worn a lot of hats at Zentera. So it sounds like, especially when you were, you know, four people running the business, it's kind of like you're doing a little bit of everything. Why has that been so valuable, or has that been valuable, I guess, in how you see the market and how you see the development process?
Yeah, 100%. So I think one key piece that, you know, I basically spent the better part of a decade on the acquisition development side of the business. So, you know, going through the full, you know, buying sites, doing your due diligence, you know, the full, you know, pre-apps, designing communities, you know, getting everything entitled all the way through the municipal process, pulling permits and everything like that. And that's actually only in the last year and a half where I've actually transitioned over to the marketing sales side. And a lot of those skill sets that I learned on that side of the business is very transferable, in the sense that you're able to really kind of think about, you know, what is the project that you want to deliver? What are those communities that you want to deliver? And how do you plan for that, right? You know, understanding buyer psyches, you know, understanding the fact that, hey, what floor plate does the best? What can hit a higher price per square foot? Was going to have a higher absorption rate? And what are those impacts that need to be, I guess, determined very early in the process? It allows you to essentially just kind of roll it all the way through. So when you come to market, you're able to deliver something that the average purchaser, whether you're an investor, first-time buyer, or downsizer, is really looking for. So there's definitely a lot of value that you can kind of take from that. And I think one of the other pieces that is very unique within that is that some of these very well-established, well-regarded developers, you quite often see a lot of people who are very much siloed, right? And you kind of see one piece of that assembly line, and you do it exceptionally well. One thing that I've been very fortunate of is that I've been able to see or highlight, you know, all the way through the process, you know, seeing the different buckets, seeing the different departments, whether it's on the acquisition side, going through that full process, you know, spending the multiple years on the development side. And being able to hone those skills and basically making them applicable to the marketing and sales side. So we're able to, you know, build up with the team about 2,500 to 3,000 homes, transition over to that, and now be able to shift that to be able to sell great homes to great home buyers.
Why the Fraser Valley?
I would say one of the biggest things is that part of, at least for mine, is that when I was first getting to the market, you know, there's a lot of big players that saw that did quite a bit of work, obviously in the inner circle, right? You know, the inner communities, you know, your Vancouver's, your Burnaby's, the Richmond's, the North Shores of the world. And one of the biggest things is being at the, I'm a millennial in my mid 30s. And one of the biggest things that I saw was that, you know what, there's going to be a tremendous amount of growth that way. And also, there's also going to be a tremendous amount of infrastructure growth out that way, because that's where the population is going to go, right? As kind of the years went on, you also see just how much tremendous amount of infrastructure improvements that you are seeing this way, right? And a lot of it really started with, you know, you saw like the Portman Bridge expansion, right? And that was a major east-west connection improvement. You didn't have to sit in traffic for God knows how long, getting from the Fraser Valley back in. And then once that kind of went in, it kind of just absolutely kicked off this absolute rollout of people saying, hey, you know what? There's always going to be this improvement growth in the Fraser Valley, and that's where we kind of focus in on. You know, we also saw the fact that, you know, some of the barriers to entry were a little bit more applicable. You know, like if you try and jump into a high rise, hey, you know, I have to have a pocket full of change. The crew didn't have that at the time. And now it's kind of like what we're seeing is that, you know, the Fraser Valley, as that rolls, you know, especially with, you know, how much immigration is coming to Canada, a lot of newcomers come out to this way. And at least from my end, it's like you're seeing a lot of people, the end users, or people that are actually going to buy in our homes, and they're actually going to live in them. And we're seeing a tremendous amount of people that maybe they used to live in the Fraser Valley, and maybe they moved downtown Vancouver. Now they're coming back home to kind of, you know, expand their families or anything like that as well.
Fantastic. How's the market, Derek?
Well, we're right now talking like late August right now. So I think we have to kind of take everything with a little bit of grain of salt. A lot of people are getting ready back to the school and everything like that. But, you know, as a whole, it seems like south of the Fraser has been weathering better than north of the Fraser. For our sales centers, we're actively going, we're doing our sales, doing very tempo sales for the majority of the year. And we're seeing reasonable upticks, reasonable absorption rates across our sites. But I think one of the really critical pieces is that the average buyer is just that much more intelligent. And I think that we're seeing that in the last number of years, and that, they're very honed in. It's not just the realtor that, has the MLS login that's kind of coming in and, giving their feedback. It's like these investors, these first-time buyers, these repeat buyers, these upsizers, they all have a really good pulse on the market. So especially in 2024, it's been absolutely critical and absolutely paramount that, pricing's on point, your incentive structure's on point, whether it's being your deposits, whether it be maybe some sort of decorating allowance, and just making sure that you have a proper program site versus like size of floor plans, as well as the unit mix, has been absolutely tremendously important. So, 2021, I know we all saw the crazy days that you just put out a for sale sign, it was gone type thing, right? You're blowing out projects, overnight. But I think what this market has really required is that a lot more strategic thinking, and it's really putting a lot of value on people that have the experience and knowledge that can execute in this type of market.
Just out of curiosity, who are you seeing through your display or your presentation centers? Like, have investors been quite active? And secondly, what are people looking for right now in terms of, like, is there a certain incentive or deposit structure that is that you're like, wow, this one is really attractive in this market?
Yeah, so I think people who are coming through the sales centers right now, it's a mix. I think we're definitely seeing, there's a lot of people that the level of urgency, people are feeling that they can check out what's, across the marketplace. And they feel like they do have a bit of time in that regard, right? In past market cycles, it's like, heck, if you don't buy here, your units can be gone. The units can be up $50,000 in a couple of weeks, like that in that sense. So I think it's really allowing people to really kind of gauge, okay, where do they want to be? I think one of the things that's kind of shaking out from that, and we've always been very strategic with a lot of our purchases on the acquisition side, you want to make sure that your class A locations, close to schools, close to parks, close to transit, whatever that is. So I think, people that are looking for, from the investor side, they are being really paying attention to, like the deposit structure, right? What is going to be the rental in this area? And I think one thing when you're looking at, the Fraser Valley is that, kind of you're from a cash flow perspective. Like, even the last couple of years, we've seen absolute tremendous increase on the appreciation side, as a lot of other markets have. But I would also say, going back to your question about kind of the structure and what's been really important, I think, deposits have been really critical. You're seeing a lot of incentives out there, whether it's, some of the high rise developers out there are doing, like a 10% deposits, or a 5-5-5 deposit, or a strung out, just because, when you're looking at real estate, you have to take in consideration a lot of other different metrics, as you guys are both very aware. And I think one thing that people are looking at is a couple things, opportunity cost of capital. And one of the avenues when you're looking at that, it's like, where's that capital coming from? And, if people are using leveraged assets, if you're using a HELOC or something like that. I think one thing that people have to take in consideration was that capital cost. For the longest time, interest rates were absolutely dirt cheap. And now, you're borrowing money at probably, if it's a secured line, probably plus or minus 7% kind of thing. So if it's a little bit of a more stretched out deposit, that cost then is a little bit different. The other thing that a lot of people need to make that connection with is also that opportunity cost is what's going on with the stock market? If any of you guys, assume you're not chucking money in GameStop or something like that, but if you're looking into,
you'd be surprised.
But if you're not playing some of that kind of roulette in the stock market, but even if you're just going really simple with the S&P 500, the S&P is up 25-30% in the last year. So it's when you can kind of take a investment and your opportunity cost of taking that money out and not earning that money and putting it to a pre-sale, yes, you're expecting that appreciation, but when you've seen this much growth of your capital, it's like, stretching out that deposit, definitely seeing some legs with purchasers is what they're kind of looking for.
Yeah. So definitely a sophisticated kind of analysis going on when it comes to to pre-sale buyers out there?
Well, it is. And I think part of that also too is also looking at mortgage rates, right? And I think that's where some of the creativity or some of the pieces that people need to look at. I mean, like, you know, even if we looked at, let's say, like last fall, for example, right? Kind of that like kind of peak of where interest rates were, you know, you were getting, you know, fixed rates were at like, you know, 6.5%, low sixes kind of thing. And then what a lot of things that are kind of being put in here is you're also getting stressed at +2%. So, you know, when we're looking at that, you know, you're in the mid eights, you know, that used to be secondary money. So, I mean, so when that standpoint, like, hey, that's kind of scary for people for on the pre-sale side. But I mean, we've seen a pretty substantial clawback even in the last, you know, 9 months. You know, right now, you can kind of get 3-year fix at, you know, like 4.5% for a mortgage standpoint. So you know, rather being stress tested at 6.5%, you know, getting stress tested, or sorry, if rather than getting stressed at 8.5, now it's 6.5. Right. And then also too, like, what does that do to your payment? Right. So I mean, from an investor standpoint, if that needle's moved a couple hundred dollars, I'm like, hey, that's a substantial shift, especially if you have multiple properties or anything like that. So it's looking at all those different influences, which I feel is a big impact for a lot of people, whether they're making that next leap at the next property.
Derek, you know, we've got, I think, 3 more Bank of Canada meetings before the end of the year here. And just thinking right now, you know, you could go out and probably get a mortgage for 4.5 or 4.5 roughly. Where do rates have to be in your mind to really move the needle and bring back a strong market favoring sellers?
Yeah, Adam, it's a good question. And I mean, one of the biggest things is about the real estate market and some of the fundamentals is that it's an emotion, right? And, you know, for a lot of buyers, it's what you're really kind of taking consideration is where do they think things are going, where they have some consistency, and also just really looking at, you know, they want to have, you know, a clear conscience or mindset that they're making the right decision. And I think if we kind of look at things, you know, especially over the last couple of months, you know, inflation, you know, knock on wood, seems like it's kind of like, you know, it's getting under control. And we came in, I believe it was like 2.7% or 2.5% the last kind of monthly announcement. And, you know, we've had, 3 cuts in a row. And I think there's a pretty strong piece that in the September announcement, there'll be another drop. And then we have our October announcement. And, you know, assuming nothing changes, we'll probably have another drop. I think that just kind of gives a really good undertone of where things are going. We're past the top of that cycle, right? You know, inflation is kind of is under control. And especially, I think one of the big things that I was keeping a really close eye on was, you know, on the US market. And, you know, when Jerome Powell came out this past week and basically said, you know, they've kind of signaled that, you know, like they got things under control and they're going to be dropping their rates as well. And I mean, that's a couple of factors, right? I mean, one thing is that, you know, you look at the US-Canada markets just from a macro perspective, we're absolutely tied together. So when you have that point where, you know, we've already had a couple of drops, they've been a little bit more delayed in that regard, is that from a decoupling standpoint, we're not as worried about like a currency devaluation from a Canada standpoint. So then it's like, you know, for example, you know, we're not seeing our currency being devalued. We're not going to see the cost of imports that are going to go way up just because it costs us more because our currency is worth less. So I think the fact that the U.S. has kind of signaled that it's my expectation, hope that that's just going to signal that, hey, we're going to have a stronger market going ahead. And, you know, I'm going back to your original question of where we need to see rates are. It's like, you know, I suspect that when we see this consistency in dropping, you know, hey, the fall market, you know, I will likely see more of the same. We may see a lot of buyers coming out of the woodwork, but, you know, I'm definitely optimistic for 2025 and what that's going to look like, right? I mean, you know, there's a Bloomberg article that came out, I believe it was yesterday, and, you know, they're saying that by the end of 25, we might be at 2.75% Bank of Canada rate. So I mean, compared to where we were at 5.25 to 2.75%, that's a substantial drop. So I think that, you know, that you're going to see more people pile in, and there's just been a lot of pent up demand over the last little bit where people are kind of looking for that uncertainty, and now it seems like that certainty is now coming back into the marketplace.
Derek, I'm just thinking about kind of Zentera's run since the 4 people in the in the shop started. Like, we had the big kind of run up in 2016, 2017. Then the Fraser Valley did exceptionally well during COVID, kind of everybody moving out to the burbs and looking for more space and needing that office, the home office. But I know you guys have been very active in the last 2 years, as you said, during the slowdown, and you've still been, you know, quite successful. Can you talk a little bit about how, if at all, strategy and practice has changed during this, you know, down cycle?
I would say on our end, it's being very in tune with the market and being able to pivot very quickly. I think that's a very big piece. I think like any time that we've kind of looked at designing a project, it's been very much delivered to, you know, it has something for everyone, right? Whether it being investor group, first time buyer, move up buyer, whether it's going to be your right sizer, is that, you know, part of the goal is always to try and ensure that you can hit a lot of those different buckets, not being completely all in one bucket, because as soon as, you know, if the market shifts and that market kind of takes off or goes away, then it's like you're kind of hooped. So part of the things is, like I mentioned earlier, about being class A locations, close to transit, close to amenities has always been a really good piece. And that just really focuses on just being really solid at the land buying standpoint. And then, you know, how we've been kind of more consistent is also like, you know, a lot of our purchasers are also more like end users or mom and pop investors. So they're looking for more localized opportunities. And I think that's where their capital is sometimes a little bit more localized and looking at macro markets. And another piece too is that, you know, for example, a lot of people that are, and I've talked to a number of our purchasers, and a lot of them being parents, and a lot of them are like, hey, you know what, helping out their kids with a down payment, right? So I think like, you know, when you're looking at some of these other sub markets, you know, if you're north of the Fraser, you're $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 a foot for concrete. If you're West Coquitlam or Burnaby or Metrotown or whatever, and that barrier to entry is a little bit less. So, you know, when you're able to kind of get a wood frame product, and, you know, in Langley for, you know, $875, $850, $900 a foot, the barrier to entry is a little bit easier. And also, you know, rather than having to put up like, you know, a concrete size, you know, 20% down, you know, a lot of the wood frame out here is doing, you know, 10%. So I think that the initial hurdle has allowed us to try and still capitalize that, you know, life still happens, right? You know, if you have a kid, you know, it doesn't really kind of matter that, you know, if you have what interest rates are. If you're living in a one bedroom apartment with you and your spouse or partner, now you have a kid, it's like, well, you need more space. You know, on the flip side, but unfortunately, you know, if there's a divorce, well, you know what, that leads to two new households, right? So I think that's where it's like, you know, like life still happens. I think that's where we've been able to be very successful in just kind of capturing that side of the market as well.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
It's interesting because we've got a couple questions about the Fraser Valley, but we always hear at least kind of the narrative about affordability and chasing affordability in the Lower Mainland. And that's kind of been at least kind of the framework that has kind of defined this push east, right? And I, Is it still an affordability story, or like in your mind, what do you attribute the relative strength of the Fraser Valley to?
I would say on our end, the strength is, I think, you know, for example, with COVID, I think that was a big shift. I think that, you know, people were looking for space. You know, I guess the more universal acceptance of working from home, right? I mean, I personally, for our firm, we are a completely in-office firm. And I think that for our people, I think a big thing is that there's so much collaboration. And I think that from our perspective, like, you know, from a mentorship standpoint, I think it's a lot easier being able to do something, you know, in person rather than over the phone type thing. But for a lot of people, if your job doesn't need that, I mean, you know, saving that commute, you know, maybe going from two cars down to one car, you know, just typically our unit mixes are a little bit bigger type thing, right? You know, I'll this way, you know, just going back a few years, but, you know, typical townhome was 2,000 square feet. Right? That's what we designed. Those are very livable homes. So, I mean, now we've shifted down just to kind of stay in line with affordability. But I think a livability standpoint, and then also just a lot of the infrastructure and the improvements out this way. You know, I personally live in the Tri-Cities now, but for the longest time, I actually moved out from North Vancouver, where I grew up, and I was living in Langley for a while. I was also living in South Surrey, White Rock for a while. And one of the biggest things that I always really appreciated coming from the North Shore and going out this way is everything's new, right? Like you have brand new community centers, you know, you have brand new schools, you know, brand new parks. Like, because a lot of these things with these greenfield developments is that you have to build a lot of this new infrastructure. And some of those positive pieces, like, you know, for example, like in South Street, the Grandview Aquatic Center, beautiful, brand new building, right? And I think that a lot of these things, it's very much like, you know, it's the 21st century of a lot of these amenities that are in place. And I think a lot of these younger families are appreciating. And I mean, you're also seeing that from the different levels of government as well. Like, you know, with those kind of couple of examples were from a municipal level, but we look at like provincially and federally. It's looking at some of these infrastructure improvements that you're seeing. I'm kind of talking about earlier, but like the Portman Bridge expansion, right? And, you know, recently they just announced like over $2 billion of infrastructure improvement for Highway 1. And I mean, when you're seeing these huge numbers that are being invested, and I mean, we haven't even talked about the new SkyTrain that's going to be coming down here straight down Fraser Valley. And that's like, you know, a minor shift, right? So, right, like, you know, when you see these kind of capital expenditures, you know, you kind of get in these situations where you're in the, you know, the pathway of progress. And I mean, when you're looking at what is going to be here in, you know, 5 to 10 years, it's very exciting. You know, for example, take Surrey City Center. There's over 30,000 units in application, active application. And, you know, I don't know what the latest tower count or the latest crane count for city centers, but there's always something being built in there. So when you look at these kind of like a secondary downtown core with all the office space, now obviously office is a little bit of a softer market to say the least right now. But when you see the huge amount of drive and investment out here, it's really exciting. And I think that, you know, with the provincial government and as well as the federal government, how they're taking a little bit more a positive stance and bringing more supply to the market, you're seeing a lot of these growth nodes that are seeing higher density, which are going to be able to provide, you know, better amenities. You're going to be able to see, you know, what often was seen, like you wouldn't think of ever there'd be kind of concrete down Fraser Highway in Fleetwood. Well, now it's like, you know, there's towers that are currently in application and, you know, over 40 stories. So I think that when you're looking at a lot of these things is that, you know, a lot of these neighborhoods are also going through a shift. And it's also going to be kind of a byproduct of, you know, for the first time in a long time, you're now seeing two generations that are also purchasing, right? You're seeing, you know, that millennial purchaser, but also Gen Zs that are also purchasing. You know, on the older side of a Gen Z, they are about like 26 or 27 years old now. They're kind of going to that first time buyer segment. So a lot of these areas, they might be looking for something different that, you know, that Gen X or that boomer was looking for. So, you know, for a lot of them, they're chasing places that, you know, hey, they can actually see themselves buying in an area. And, you know, a lot of the work that I do is I have a lot of conversation with the younger buyers. What are they looking for? What are the amenities that they're interested in? What are some of the biggest hurdles that they find within the buyer's the buyer cycle? And how can you kind of provide something that they actually can can utilize so they can get into their first property as well. So I think for the Fraser Valley, that's a lot of stuff that I'm really excited for, and it's just going to keep on coming.
I was just going to say, we've seen a narrowing, and this was part of COVID, which you alluded to as well, that the changes in the dynamics of the market, and a lot of people obviously work from home looking for more space, et cetera. We've seen like a leveling out, not only in prices, but in rents. I mean, there used to be quite a big gap in the market in terms of, you know, Vancouver being kind of more Vancouver-centric compared to the rest of the region. And you would see, you know, a real attractive difference in the price points to move further east. That has now leveled out in a lot of ways. Do you think there's people out there that argue that the pendulum will swing and we'll see Vancouver go on a bit of a run, or areas around that kind of border Vancouver? Do you think that's the case, or do you think the infrastructure and all the things you just spoke about have kind of leveled out the market and we're just now kind of more generally consistent throughout the region in terms of pricing and rents?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's a really good question. I think you kind of mentioned the fact that, you know, the COVID kind of leveled things out a little bit. And I think part of things is that, like, from an investor standpoint, is looking at, okay, well, what is my dollar debt? Okay. And kind of the, like, one of the things, like, very high levels, like, you know, hey, you know, I did the kind of comparison of some of the things I talked with some of our sales teams. Like, you know what? A buyer in the Tri-Cities can drive 15 minutes down the highway and save $150,000. Right. Like in that sense. Right. So I think, you know, especially with the improvements with Highway 1, you know, there's the new 216th overpass interchange, you know, the improvements with transit. I think that just makes it a little bit more palatable. So I think when you're looking at the leveling out of the rents, I mean, we saw an absolute rip and roll on rents in 2021 into 2022 was kind of more the shift in the rental market. And you saw year over year change of 25-30%. And I think, obviously, wages haven't kept up with that. So I think that when you're looking at places, you know, people are often just looking for a place to live. And then when we're looking at some of these avenues, it's like, you know, if you're looking at, you know, hey, if you're a one-bedroom condo and, like, you know, maybe you're about, like, $2,500, $2,600, don't quote me on that, but that unit's going to cost you, I don't know, maybe $600,000-something. Well, you know, you can get into Langley in, like, the 208th corridor, the 200th corridor, a one-bedroom place, and you're renting it for $2,200 a month, $2,150 a month, but your purchase price is going to be maybe $150,000 less. And so these current interest rates, when you're looking at your cost of capital, you know, when you're looking at what your interest carry cost is, you're doing the math. You're like, well, wait a second, this is actually not a bad deal. And then you're also looking at a factor of that, you know, in the Fraser Valley, you're typically looking at a higher immigrant population moving out this way. And I mean, what we've seen from the federal government, I know it's no secret. They've absolutely put the gas on how much immigration is coming to Canada. And I know in the last couple of weeks, it just seems like there might be a little bit of a shift in that. But if you look at all these people that are moving to Canada, like, a lot of them are moving to Surrey, a lot of them are moving into Langley. And one big thing that we're seeing, especially in Surrey, is that, you know, the power of the South Asian population and just how much that drives the marketplace. And, you know, going to these rents, if we're kind of pulling it full circle, going back to rents, is like, yeah, you know, we may see a bit of a shift where, you know, hey, north of Fraser may pivot a little bit. But I know, taking a comment, and I think he's been on your guys' podcast before, Scott Brown, and he kind of talked about how that shift of where the center of Metro Vancouver was, you know, downtown, and now it's kind of shifting over further east to where, you know, probably Burnaby is. And I think over time, it's just going to keep shifting. I mean, that was part of my investment thesis. Like, you know, I moved to the Tri-Cities because in time, I suspect it's going to keep moving further and further east, just because as the general cost of housing keeps going up. And unfortunately, labor, the labor market and what people are getting paid hasn't kept up with that. So people are just going to be chasing that affordability model.
Derek, you mentioned the power of the South Asian community in the Fraser Valley. And, you know, Adam kind of got to this idea of the markets decoupling a little bit before, but I just wanted to drill down a little bit there. Like, are you seeing, does it still make sense to say Vancouver's price is X, or Coquitlam's price is X, therefore Surrey's price should be Y? Or are they kind of two environments that are not necessarily speaking to each other as much as they once did?
You know, I think there's also almost been like a decoupling to an extent. And I think that one of the things is that, you know, especially it's been very important to understand in this type of market is getting inside the psyche of the buyer and what their perceived value is. And I mean, and before, you know, back X amount of years, like, hey, you know, downtown Vancouver is this. And then you go down $100 a foot, you go out to Burnaby, go like all the way down kind of thing. But what you're seeing is that gap has been kind of squeezed. And I think it's kind of a couple factors. You know, the first one is that, you know, chasing affordability is a big piece. It's like, you know, people just want to get a home that they can afford. But it's also the perceived value. So if you have someone that's maybe doesn't have that same connotation to like a Coal Harbor or something like that, like it doesn't matter as much. And so, you know, this perceived value, for example, if you're like kind of like West Coquitlam and then you're plus or minus $1,200 a foot, $1,250 a foot. Well, you know, for Surrey City Center, you're seeing, you know, concrete launching at, you know, like $1,150 plus or minus kind of thing, right? So I think that like a lot of the importance is getting to that psyche of that purchaser and where they see that value, where there's different neighborhoods, different product types, but also seeing like how that works from a financial standpoint. And I mean, you know, we kind of talked about a little bit earlier about, you know, rental rates. And, you know, like at least out in the Fraser Valley, you don't see a massive difference between a concrete rent and a wood frame rent. But your entry is that much less from a purchase price. So I think that, you know, when we're looking at these different neighborhoods and different areas of the market, it's that, you know, the Fraser Valley is almost kind of creating a bit of its own kind of market just because a lot of the buyer groups that are focusing on out this way that they see the value and they want to be out here because of their identified amenities or identified value in their eyes.
And so just so I'm clear, Derek, like when you reference price per square foot in West Coquitlam versus Surrey City Center and it being fairly close, the idea there is that the people buying in Surrey aren't looking at West Coquitlam pricing and going, oh, I really would rather be in West Coquitlam and maybe the value's there if the pricing gets closer together. They're looking in Surrey and they want to be in Surrey. Is that right?
Well, it depends on what the buyer is, obviously, right? Like, you know, if you're an investor that, you know, doesn't have you know, a really attachment to anywhere, you're chasing value type,
sure,
right? So I think, like, you know, for example, if you're an investor and you're looking at different pockets, whether you're looking at Metrotown, you know, if you're looking at Brentwood, if you're looking at Coquitlam, if you're looking at Surrey, you're kind of looking for the best opportunity there. But there are going to be buyers that they just, maybe that area just doesn't suit them. Right. Like, I mean, same thing with me. Like, you know, personally for me, like I grew up in the suburbs. I don't really have a big want or need to live downtown Vancouver. I just don't. Like, it doesn't draw me. I'd rather be close to the mountains, close to, you know, the suburbs, just because that's what I grew up in. That's where I hold higher value. Right. So I think that's when you're thinking about the builder or the buyer psyche, that's where it's like, you know, there's some people that may just not put that perceived value. And when you have a lot of people moving to the area, they don't have these predetermined associations with certain areas that they just kind of talk to their network. And it's like, hey, you know what? I want to live over here versus I want to live over there. And I think that is becoming a bigger driver in some of these submarkets and especially in Surrey and Langley.
Can you, Derek, just as someone who is working in that market, we've got a lot of listeners that love to kind of know where the up and coming areas are, or the best pockets in a region are. Can you talk about maybe the Fraser Valley and pockets of the Fraser Valley that you're most excited about?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, you know, I think a lot of these areas that are seeing a lot of infrastructure improvements is a big one, right? And I think, you know, for example, we've seen it time and time again, right? You know, we saw it with the SkyTrain line that went to the Tri-Cities, right? You know, all the new SkyTrain lines that, you know, all the stations and what happened to North Road. You know, you saw it with the Canby corridor and the Olympic line, right? And, you know, how Canby just kind of exploded and we evolved all this concrete and where people kind of went out that way. I mean, like, and two of the biggest factors that we're really seeing is obviously Highway 1 improvement is, you know, massive infrastructure improvement, which I've already mentioned, and also the SkyTrain line. So I know for some of these up and coming areas, and I wouldn't even say they're really up and coming, because I mean, I've seen these areas just absolutely blossom over the last X amount of years. But I think when we're looking at areas of the Willoughby area, you're seeing a tremendous amount of development out that way. We have multiple sites that we've sold in the past, and we have upcoming sites that are coming up in the future, which we can get into a little bit. But also along the Fraser Highway corridor and all these different nodes that we're seeing for these TOD communities that are going to be coming up. And it's going to be like all the Fleetwood neighborhood, you know, all the areas around like 152nd and Fraser Highway, 160th and Fraser Highway. They're becoming these little mini city centers, you know, with like thinking of it almost like a saddle approach, right? You have Surrey City Center at the top of the saddle, and it kind of drops down as you kind of go out from there. I mean, you're also seeing areas like, the Clayton neighborhood, which is predominantly either being, single family acres development, which is now being completely rezoned. You're going to have these, massive communities that are, six-story wood frame communities. And even like, I mean, in the long term, potentially some mid-rises. So I think what you are seeing is that there's going to be a tremendous amount of like new amenities coming to these areas, which are going to, drive buyers to move these spaces. So if you're looking at neighborhoods, I mean, that Willoughby pockets around the Fleetwood and down the Fraser Highway corridor, and Clayton are a couple of the big places that we're really excited about.
And a popular saying in real estate is buy the rumor, sell the news. Any rumors you're monitoring?
No, it's a good question. I think like on our end, I think the pockets that I've kind of mentioned are ones that we've identified in the past. And I think that, when you're looking at the, it's looking at the idea of like, a Starbucks location, right? There's a new Starbucks location going in. Typically, it's a good idea to own a shop in and around there, because they've spent God knows how much money on the research to know this is a good spot to be. So, historically, if you have a shop that's near a Starbucks, you're going to do pretty okay. So I think like from our end of standpoint, like, when we're looking at some of these areas that we've kind of looked at is like, we see the value and we're going to deliver. So, some of our upcoming communities, we are getting ready for a launch of one of our largest scale communities. It's going to be called Solana. It's going to be in Willoughby. And when the community's said and done, it's going to be, approximately 900 homes. Right. So, I mean, like from that standpoint, we are preparing for this is where people are going to want to live. And that's the angle that we've gone. We've built our business model around it.
And that's wood frame.
Correct.
It must be sprawling.
It's, if we quickly touch base about our upcoming Solana community, is that I was working on it for several years in the development application standpoint. It's a 12-acre site. And originally, when we were designing it, it was supposed to be townhomes in one lot, another townhomes lot in the middle. So it was like 60, 125, and then about 230 apartments. But with all the shift at the different levels of government, part of that community got rezoned and redensified. So we have the original 60-odd townhomes, which is our currently actively selling project called Latimer Walk. And now we have over 850 apartments in this now new area. And part of that is that, how do you design that redevelopment so that you can still have a positive impact with purchasers? So one of the big things that we did was that, we wanted to take an avenue of, we wanted to throw that like localized improvement, localized amenity space. So for that community alone, when it's all said and done, we'll have over 90,000 square feet indoor and outdoor amenity space. So that's part of that smart development. That's part of like, understanding your buyer segment. It's part of that is understanding that, when you are designing a community, it can't just be absolutely cranking everything. You have to be able to be a little more strategic. And I think that when we're looking at that, when you go from a buyer segment, that investor or that first-time home buyer or that, the right sizer, when you have 90,000 plus square feet of amenity space, like literally outside your door, we have like pickleball court pickleball is kind of a big thing these days, right? You know, we have a bocce area, you know, we have, you know, outdoor, you know, outdoor dog park, you know, we have a huge, you know, barbecue space, we have sun lounges, we have walking trails, all this stuff. So I think when you look at that, you literally don't even have to hop in your car. You just get outside in it and enjoy, you know, over a couple acres of space, just right in your own community. And I think that's where, you know, when you look at some of these areas, that's where I foresee like a lot of the Fraser Valley, you're going to see more and more of these, you know, a premier amenity spaces for some of these large scale communities.
Hmm. Makes a lot of sense. Last question for you, Derek, and we've kept you a long time. What does the market look like for the fall of 2024 here? So we're entering into September here in the next couple of days, start of the fall market. What do you think the market does over the next quarter? And then do we see the market take off this year, or is this more of a 2025 story?
You know what? And maybe even, let's just say, just to put a fine point on it, is the fall busier than the spring? Yes or no? And what do you see for 2025?
Well, I'm just getting out my crystal ball right now here, eh? yeah, I'm buying a lottery ticket after this. You know what? I think, you know, a couple pieces to that. You know, for the market wise, you know, I think that for the first time in a long time, we have a lot of projects that are getting ready to launch. You know, maybe some that were potentially waiting to launch earlier in the year that may be held back. And we're also seeing a standpoint of, you know, there could be a tremendous amount of supply coming onto the market if the market is there. So it'll be very interesting to see how that kind of contains with the buyers in the marketplace. So within that, I think that, you know, from a headwind standpoint, I think, you know, I'm hoping and I expect we will hopefully have some more, you know, tailwinds in the sense that, you know, Bank of Canada drops interest rates again in September. You know, we get interest rates drop again in October. You know, we see the standpoint that, you know, that the inflation has been taken under control. And I mean, from that standpoint, I think buyer sentiment kind of sees that, hey, you know, the negative winds are more behind us and, you know, we have, you know, greener pastures ahead. The thing to watch, I would really say, is going to be, you know, 2025. And I would also say that the smart money is buying now. And you guys are probably seeing that from some of the incentive programs, some of the deposit structures, some of the buyer opportunities. And just that, you know, there are projects out there that are offering some really tremendous amount of value. And, you know, for a lot of buyers, this could be, you know, an opportunity where, hey, you know, prices haven't absolutely ripped yet. Interest rates are falling. So this could be this window where, you know, it's a really good opportunity to buy. And I mean, you know, when you're looking at that, it's fine. We talk about buyer's markets and seller's markets type thing, right? You know, there are some markets that are in a buyer's market. So, you know, if you're in a buyer's market, you should buy, right? So I think that when you're looking at some of these incentive programs, some of these developers are doing, you know, they're either trying to attain, you know, construction financing. You know, I've heard a handful of anecdotal options where, you know, some people, they're offering tremendous value because they need 10 more deals to hit construction financing. So, you know, like, you know, they drop their price by like $100,000 because, you know, hey, the delay in not getting those sales right now is worth less than us getting, you know, under construction right today. And then, hey, then, you know, once the market's picking up, incentives are going to be gone. So I think that, you know, fall, hey, you know, the smart money is looking to buy now. And then 2025 will be a really good understanding of where we're going to be heading after this a little bit softer cycle.
Sound advice. We have this segment called the Five Wire, Derek. Five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
100%.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the presale world on fire without a spark. Question number one, what is one book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners?
Yeah, so I think, Adam, for you, one of the biggest things that unfortunately, I don't do a lot of fictional readings, typically mostly reports, non-fictional reading, everything like that. But one of the pieces that I did was anytime you're looking for, inspiration type things, it's like, you look outside of your industry. And one of the ones that I picked up was, read this earlier this year, was, Unreasonable Hospitality. Okay. And I might butcher the author's name a little bit, but it was by Will Guidara. And basically what it was talking about, a Michelin star restaurant and its rise to fame in New York City. And basically what it really talked about was kind of the key avenues that you can really take towards of really excelling your business, whether it being your restaurant, your convenience store, your general small business, being a realtor, anything like that. And what it really kind of highlighted was some key details, right? And one of the biggest things is attention to detail. Small gestures matter. Paying every a detail. And the example that they talked about in the book was the table settling and how you personalize the service. If you've regulars, you add a little touch to everything. Constantly empowering your team, trusting and growing your team. And one of the big takeaways that I had from that was, I've really focused with my team over the last year is doing a tremendous amount of mentorship and mentorship and support to help them grow into both their personal goals as well as their professional goals. And some of the other things that the book talked about, anticipating needs of being proactive versus reactive, consistency matters. And, having the ability to be adaptable if things shift at the 11th hour, right? Like, I expect interest rates to go up to probably 4.5% to 5%. I didn't see 6.5%, 6.5% rates. So it's having the adaptability that with your business model, how you do pivot in market shifts. So I definitely would give that a positive recommendation.
That's a great one. I'm about halfway through that book.
Oh, really?
It's phenomenal. And I got the recommendation, I think, from Daryl Simpson, if I'm not.
Well, I was going to say somebody has recommended that show. I don't know on the air, but definitely somebody was on the podcast.
I think actually Chris Harburn actually is a big fan of that book too. I think. Anyways, it's funny, but a lot of super smart people out there love that book. So you're in good company, Derek.
Guess I'm faking it till I make it if I'm in that company then.
In the last few years, Derek, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
I know a lot of people come out here and say, exercise and everything like that. And I've always been active my entire life. So, I like whether it's being mountaineering, backcountry skiing, ice climbing, whatever. But for me, one of the biggest habits or beliefs that I've really taken on to the last little while is the power of silence and just quiet. And I don't mean in a negotiation standpoint. I mean that from a standpoint that, the last couple of years or several years, there's such a big focus on the hustle culture, the 3 a.m. club or whatever. I get up and do my ice bath at 2:30 in the morning and do all this hecticness. The constant always being plugged in, always go, go, go. And one of the things that I really found was the power of silence, the power of things being quiet. And what it is that, I kind of use a little bit of a comparison to going to the gym. If you work out every single day, 7 days a week, doing two-a-days or anything like that, you don't give your body the opportunity to rest. And the thing is that there is a huge amount of value in resting. And I think that one big piece of that is that, giving your mind the ability to recharge allows you just to be better in the long run. So one of the things that I've done is that, when I'm on my drive to work, I just have the music off. I just, think about my day think about the steps I need to take. And it's really helped me just be more efficient and more proactive with my day-to-day life.
I was trying to remember who that reminds me of, but it's a bit of a Jack Dorsey approach in some ways. That's a great one. Question number three for you. We are going into, well, we're leaving summer here, but going into cooler weather. Is there anything that you've been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation?
So I don't watch a lot of TV. I moved into my current house, about 3+ years ago, and it took me almost 3 years to install my TV. Like I just left it. I left it in the closet. I don't need it. I don't watch it, whatever. But I would say, so I'm always behind the trends on watching TV shows or anything like that. I've never watched Lost. I think a lot of people have. I haven't. But one thing I recently did binge watch was Peaky Blinders.
Okay.
Right? And yeah, just love the show. Love the characters. Love the character development. How it was all pieced together. And just all the strategy that was put involved. Really enjoyed it. So it was a cool. I definitely had to have the captions on because you couldn't understand half the words they were saying. But that was one that I recently did.
That's a great one. Question number four, favorite band or music?
Okay, so when I'm not listening to the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, but I would say, I do, anytime the Foo Fighters come on
nice.
For the radio, just, it's a go-to. I mean, I love a lot of their old stuff. They're in your Honor album. It was probably one of my favorite ones. It was one of the first concerts I went to. Absolutely loved it. And then this is going to be a very much of a smaller, probably less known, artist. It's one of our local ones. And it's a guy by the name of Steve Marriott. And he's a big into working a lot of the craft brewery scenes.
Huh.
And he's an absolute magician in the sense that I don't know how he does it, but he somehow has between 400 and 500 songs memorized.
Wow.
Like covers and everything like that. So, he can do, he does like private events. He does weddings. He does corporate events. He's big into like some of the farmer festivals, and I've seen him multiple times. So, he's a regular on the Brewery Road in Port Moody, and I live about 10 minutes from there. So I've seen him a handful of times down there. So yeah, he definitely a local shout out to Stephen Marriott over there.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm sure a lot of people are going to check him out. And last but not least, Derek, something you've purchased for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life.
Okay, so $1,500. I would have to say, so I have a nine-month-old daughter, and I bought a hiking backpack, the Osprey Poco Plus, and it has been the best thing I've bought recently. I can stick her in it, go do the grouse grind with her. She's happy as a clam. Hell, I'll sometimes wear it in the house with her because she likes being up high. I'm 6'4". She just likes being able to see everything from a vantage point. It's her little turret. And that's definitely been something that under $1,500, it was definitely a good purchase on my end.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah, we've used that pack before. It's phenomenal. Well, Derek, we'll leave it there, but how can people find out more about what you're up to and, of course, as Zentera Developments?
Yeah, for sure. Visit our website at zentera.ca. You'll see some of our active selling communities. We have King Crescent in South Surrey, City Corners in Surrey City Center, Latimer Walk in Langley, as well as the Commons in Langley. We also have our upcoming community called Solana, which is going to be launching this fall in Willoughby as well. And you can just reach out to me directly. I'm just at derek@zentera.ca. So D-E-R-E-K at zentera.ca. Always up for grabbing a coffee with like-minded individuals and just chatting with people about the industry. Absolutely love it. I don't work a day in my life because I enjoy what I do so much. So always open to have a conversation.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again for taking the time today.
Perfect. Hey, thanks so much, Adam. And thanks so much, Matt, for having me.
So there you have it, folks. Vice President of Marketing and Sales, Derek Fenton over at Zentera.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Derek. always great having super bright people who have been in the industry a long time on the show. And not only in the industry a long time, but have worn many hats in the industry. So can basically talk about anything. You got cut off the call at the end, but one thing he said to me, which stuck with me is, I never work a day in my life because I love what I do. And I feel like that's the definition of most guests we have on this program. Real estate obsessed.
Hey, that's it. Real estate obsessed. Very thoughtful guy. Very interesting. I feel like that was one of those conversations where I left, you know, not that I've slept on the Fraser Valley, but, you know, we focus mainly on Vancouver and surrounding areas.
I don't
areas
think you've ever slept in the Fraser Valley, but maybe.
I just think, man, what an exciting run he's had, you know, pushing 15 years in that just booming area of the Lower Mainland. So super exciting talking to Derek.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, as everybody knows, and I mean, we focus more on Vancouver and, you know, the area immediately surrounding Vancouver. But one thing I will say about the Fraser Valley is that when I visit places like Surrey or Langley or even Chilliwack or certain parts, they've changed so dramatically in recent years. Some areas are just unrecognizable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's still changing. And lots of, as Derek mentioned, lots of exciting infrastructure planned. So yeah, I mean, some hot takeaways.
Yeah, definitely. That was a great conversation. Great one to head out into the fall market.
Yes.
On, because it gives lots of interesting things to think about over the long weekend. What else do we have before we cut for the long weekend, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer where you get stats, different types of stats, the real estate board stats, but also sales ratios, where you can dig down into different price bands and different neighborhoods. You have VIP access to pre-sales. You get deal of the month. There's basically no reason why you shouldn't be on the LiveWire. And of course, we also have tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips. All you got to do is head over to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast and sign up for your free PCS account. This is the best way to look for real estate in the Lower Mainland. And what a time to A, be alive, but B, be monitoring a market.
Such a good time to be alive, I'll tell you.
And Matt, if people want to, how can they get in touch with you?
You try me at any time, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Of course, we have that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, everyone. And so many exciting episodes planned for the beginning of the fall market, which starting after Labor Day.
The bell's about to ring.
I know. Get your sleep, everybody.
Get your sleep and get your PCS accounts.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.